Gather around your speakers, hoop heads. It's NBA story time. Jamel Johnson here to spin you tales of NBA shenanigans you didn't know you needed to know. Like that time when a little startup league tried anything to be relevant, or when Ricky Davis earned himself a dumb nickname. I also love you, Ricky Davis. Catch a new tale on NBA Storytime every week, then listen to the postgame where I break it down with comedians, ballers, and what have you. Find NBA Storytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
This is Greg Olson, inviting you to check out my new Blue Wire podcast, TE1, where I interview tight ends throughout the history of the NFL who have helped revolutionize the position. TE1 is presented by the Chevy Silverado. The Silverado is all about grit. It's strong and dependable, exactly like playing tight end. Just like the incredible players we sit down with on the podcast, the Chevy Silverado is in a league of its own. Strong, advanced, and dependable. Download TE1 today, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, you, listen up. Yeah, you guys know, we're back again. We've partnered with Louis Wicket of Key Mortgage Group. Louis Lens, guys, louislens.com. All right, you've heard the ad over the last couple months, and we are sticking with Louis. He has proved to be one of the best, truly. And you can see that in his Google reviews. He has 112 reviews, 5-star rating on Google. He is who you need to go to if you have mortgage needs. Wade Anderson on Google said, Louis did a great job working on our new mortgage. He went out of his way to make sure we got the best rate on our new home and worked extended hours some days to meet our work schedules. Would recommend anyone looking to purchase a new home to speak with Louis to make their dream of home buying a reality. Isn't that what you want? When you're trying to be in that process of buying a home, something that most people don't know a lot about, you want somebody that's going to give you the peace of mind and make you feel like as you walk away from that situation that you got the best deal and you were able to go through the entire process simply and educated throughout the entire thing. All right, Louis' cell phone number is 515-238-9949. Did you guys know that HousingWire, according to HousingWire, 90% of Americans could benefit from a mortgage refinance today? Call Louis at 515-238-9949. If you have a mortgage and haven't looked at it yet, call Louis, 515-238-9949. Walk-on fans, welcome to the episode. It is game week, and wouldn't it be nice if everything was just normal? It's 2020, and obviously that's not the case, so let's start it off with the opposing coach of week one having COVID. We'll talk about how that's going to affect the game, and 8 of our former teammates are suing for $20 million. Let's talk about it. Let's go. Have a day. Welcome in, Washington Falcons fans, back to the podcast. This was going to be a short one. It probably still will be. Kevin and Drake are not with me today. Tyler Kluver going at it alone. This was going to be a short episode because there's not a lot of content. There's not a lot of Hawkeye stuff going on. And, Drake is, I believe the poker tables have opened back up back in Arizona. He's back in Arizona now, so he's going to go play a little poker tonight. He's got to sharpen his game up, so he has some source of income in his life. Kevin is on his way back from Chicago, I believe, so he wasn't going to be able to make it till later. I kind of wanted to get this done because Sunday is a day where you want to just hang out. You want to chill. You want to have the night to yourself. At least I do. I like having the Sunday night to just hang out and do your thing. So going at it alone, looking at about 25 to 30 minutes. And if you think, oh, Tyler's doing it by himself, this could get not very interesting. I don't really like Tyler. Well, this one might be a different vibe. Like I said, this was going to be calm. I've gotten a little riled up here at the beginning of this, and I'm not very happy right now. We'll get to that in a second. It has to do with the reemergence of the racial disparity stuff and a new breaking story that literally was posted and published on Twitter about 20 minutes before I hit record. So first off, we're going to start with some of the picks from yesterday. Recording this podcast on 10-18, 10-17. We had some college picks go down. Kevin and I both had a few picks on the day. Oklahoma State, I had them -7 over Baylor, and that game got moved back. So that, canceled that off the table. So that left me with one college pick, and that was Bama-Georgia. And that was the pick that Kevin and I were kind of on opposite sides of. At the time, the line was 57, and I liked the over. Kevin liked the under, so it was kind of head-to-head. That end score was Alabama 41, Georgia 24, for a total of 65 points going over, which means my pick hit. Kevin's did not. Suck it, Kevin. Speaking of Kevin and picks, he wants to let everyone know, and this is really echoed between the three of us, the Ravens game just finished up. They were in complete control. They were kicking ass the entire game. They were -7.5. It was a pick that all three of us put out this week. And they let the Eagles come back and only won the game by 2-30 to 28. The Ravens come away with a win, but our triple lock of the week fails. Sorry. As far as Kevin's other picks, before we move on here to more important things, Tennessee -5.5. Let's see how they did. They got absolutely killed. That's right. Kentucky came out. I believe there was like 6 interceptions in that game for the Tennessee quarterback, something wild like that. So, Kevin's Tennessee pick, got smoked. Kevin took South Carolina +3. That one covered. South Carolina ends up winning that game outright over Auburn. Auburn just not looking that great. If you look at all these SEC games, right, or in just those 4 teams alone, Kentucky, Tennessee, Auburn, South Carolina, they're all 2-2. It's like the SEC is very even across the board here. And I don't think it's because they're super deep. I think it's because they're less top heavy than normal. Personal opinion. Texas A&M -5.5. That covers. They beat Mississippi State by 2 touchdowns. North Carolina -12. North Carolina tried to get absolutely run out of the gym by Florida State, who has just been absolutely trashed this season. North Carolina ranked 5th, maybe the most fraudulent 5th rated team in the history of rankings. They were down 31-7 at one point. Florida State didn't even score in the second half, still won the game 31-28. So Carolina pick did not cover. And then again, Bama, Georgia under 57. That game went over. So those are Kevin's picks. Kevin was very, very displeased, and he wanted everybody listening to know that. I asked him if he wanted to hop on the call in for this episode. He said, just make sure my discontent with the Ravens is known. So everybody, Kevin hates the Ravens. So those are the picks. There's still a couple NFL picks to roll, and we'll go over those on Thursday's episode, but those games still have yet to finish. So, the rest of this episode is going to look like this. I'm going to go over this bullshit that came out, with, as far as Iowa news. I'm going to talk quickly about Jeff Brohm and his positive COVID test and how that, at least in my eyes, affects this weekend. And then I'm going to take just a couple questions from the walk-ons account because it's only me today. I'll answer a couple of those. And then we'll circle back to those questions on Thursday when we do our Purdue look ahead. But yeah, so for those that are unaware, I'm sure by the time that this podcast comes out Monday morning, you guys will have had about 16 hours since this story broke. I mean, there's no breaking story here. Essentially, all the stuff that happened this summer with the racial disparity stuff, you know, they went in, everybody came out on Twitter, all the players, 60 plus players came out, said their grievances. They looked into it. Doyle was essentially paid to go away. You know, before today, it would seem that everything was on the up and up. Everything was kind of went about it the right way. You know, the study found what it found. No other personnel changes were recommended to be made. And we were moving forward, and we had several press conferences since then where, you know, players on the team right now said that things were incredible. They were different than before. The culture and the feel inside the facility is what they want it to be, and that Iowa football is heading in a great direction. Well, today on October 18th, 2020, some of my former teammates, in fact, I believe I played with all eight of the guys who are named in this lawsuit by some Solomon Simmons firm. I believe I played with all eight of them, so this is interesting for sure. And I'm not going to name names because I don't want to get into, you know, specific guys and how I feel against, you know, we've come out, the three of us have had a couple episodes on a couple of the guys in this, and you know how we feel about a couple of them. I had respect for a few of them, a few of the eight guys that were mentioned, and that's now gone because this is petty bullshit is what it is. This was taken care of. You know, there was obviously a problem at the University of Iowa, whether you wanted to admit it or not. You know, again, going back to, you know, go listen to episode 123. If there was a pro Doyle guy, you know, someone who was a loyal Doyle follower, it was me and Kevin. You can hear that back in that episode. Not to say that we didn't, you know, that Doyle can do no wrong, because we obviously in that episode went back, and in the episode with James and Jordan Lomax, we said, like, obviously he's an old school coach. We weren't there for every happening and circumstance that went down over the 20 years, over the 5 years that we played there, let alone the 20 years that they've been at Iowa, Coach Ferentz and Coach Doyle. So things could have obviously happened. Clearly there was some behavior that needed to be fixed or tweaked a little bit to catch up with the times, at least at minimum. And I believe that was done. I mean, I'm not really sure how to present it. I don't want to give it too much attention. Essentially, this is by Chad Lystico from Des Moines Register. Eight former University of Iowa football players seek $20 million Kirk Ferentz and Kirk Ferentz's firing over racial discrimination. They're basically just reemerging the case here, or the whole problem. And you know, back in the summer, 60 some players came out with grievance, right? Or at least made a comment that they were on the side of bringing up issues and trying to move forward. And I, after the initial shock and kind of getting over some of those remarks that I have been vocal that some of them were just completely not true. Once I got over that and got over a couple teammates of mine, former teammates of mine who had some of the lesser heavy statements that were just kind of piling on for BS reasons, I fully accepted and was happy to see the program move forward, be on the forefront of kind of the social landscape of what's going on just in America right now, and go at it full force and just make things right. But this year, and all of these eight players were a part of that. They all said their piece back then. They are seeking, and let me go down to the part where they have, they gave the university a list of demands. And if the demands were not met, they were suing. And so these are the demands. Payment, and the only reason I'm bringing this up, because I know if Drake and Kevin were here, they'd be like, this doesn't deserve the time of day. But you guys already asked about it in the Watch the Walk-Ons thing. And so I'm going to mention it, and then this will probably... we might mention it once more when Kevin and Drake pop back on, but this will be the last time we talk about it, because this is just, I mean, it's clear what's going on. Payment of $10 million for the loss of earning capacity, loss of professional opportunities, defamation, pain and suffering, mental conditions, mental anguish, PTSD, humiliation, and overall emotional distress that our clients have incurred. I could say a lot about the claims there. Not to say that some of those aren't experienced by some of the players who had real claims. But I played with all eight of these guys, got to know six of these eight guys really, really well. Aside from $10 million, another $10 million fund established to compensate the athletes for discrimination and ongoing severe and pervasive acts. I believe that's for other athletes that have been discriminated against. So the $10 million for the eight athletes, and then $10 million for future athletes or something like that. Payment of the athlete's attorney fees. Seems like if you got $10 million, you could probably pay that, huh? Partner with some Dr. Ibram Kendi or a qualified person acceptable to the athletes to administer anti-racist training. Create and support a permanent senior black male administrator, which I believe Broderick Benz has already, that's been long done. Establish a board of advisors consisting of African-American student athletes. That was already done. Removal of Kirk Ferentz and Brian Ferentz as coaches for the program. Removal of Barta as the athletics director. And then tuition waivers for any of the African-American athletes who attended Iowa during Kirk Ferentz's tenure and did not graduate with a degree. Hey, you guys, you know what's not cool this year? 2020. It hasn't been the best year. All right. We've all been struggling. There is, however, a silver lining in every bad situation. One of those silver linings this year has been DoorDash. Let me talk to you about it. Have you ever been sitting there thinking about, oh, I could use a pizza, or I could use a sandwich, or I could use a burger? I don't have the time to go get it. I have something to do here at the house, or I'm just not feeling like jumping in the car. Well, guess what? DoorDash is the app that brings you the food you're craving right to your door. Ordering is easy. Open the DoorDash app, choose what you want to eat, and your food will be left safely outside your door with the new contactless delivery drop-off setting. Right now, our listeners can get $5 off and zero delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter code BLUEWIRE. That's BLUEWIRE, BLUEWIRE, for $5 off your first order with DoorDash. Go get that grub.
Hey guys, want to interrupt the show to let you guys know we've officially partnered with AdCraft, the merchandise company that does all of our clothes. We, back in 2018, quickly found out that you guys were going to want merchandise. People wanted to wear Hawks by a Million and other themes of our show on their body. And it's a great idea. And we found a company that allowed us to put together designs and a store very quickly. And we even ran that store for a pre-Christmas sale in 2018 and did thousands of dollars worth of revenue, all to see it come crashing down when our original company kind of crapped out on us. And so we had to go shopping. We had to fix that situation after a bunch of research and looking around. AdCraft USA out of Clinton, Iowa was the choice that we went with, and we could not be happier. Guys, again, AdCraft is a family-owned company. Since 1974, they do custom apparel and merchandise for teams, organizations, and companies all around the state and beyond, and they have a brand new customization tool. Guys, I'm telling you, you can do stuff like hoodies, t-shirts, long sleeves, performance tees, tanks, baseball tees, and more. It's seriously a cool product, and it's very easy to use. I've been on here messing around by myself. AdCraftDesign.com, AdCraftDesign.com. And best of all, listeners of the Wash Up Walk-Ons podcast get 20% off their order when they use code WALKON, WALKON. That's code WALKON, WALKON, at AdCraftDesign.com. Go make that custom merch. And now back to the show.
Again, not going to get into it. Not going to get into it. But what I see this as, and again, I'm on the side of the my African-American teammates who came out with legitimate claims and were looking to positively change Iowa football. I'm on their side. I do not see any of these this action right here, waiting until the day of game week, the Sunday of game week, to release this. They made, I believe, so this demand, the deadline was October 19th. Monday of game week one. This is a reach for attention that they evidently didn't get enough of. This is a reach for compensation that all eight of these players think they're entitled to or think that they lost out on because they weren't given the opportunity to, let's see, loss of professional opportunities, which several of these players got professional opportunities after they transferred to somewhere else. Loss of earning capacity. That's an interesting one for me. This is some kind of ploy. I don't know what it is by them, but I find it extremely disrespectful. If you're trying to make the, you know, I truly believe that James Daniels' intent earlier in the summer was to further Iowa football, make them better, make the culture better. I truly believe that. After having him on the podcast, after reading everything, all the articles he was a part of, I truly believe that. I don't believe that's what these eight guys are after. And I'm sure there will be other people on this other side of this. I'm sure there will be people who disagree and take this as, oh, Kluver's racist, Kluver is victim blaming, all this stuff. Again, I'm not. I'm on their side. I'm on their side as long as they're doing it for the right reason. And I believe that there is a right reason. There were guys who were wronged in the program. And some of these guys might even have some of those, but why are we doing this now? You know, that first, maybe lead in the demands of the program, those eight or nine demands, it looks like, maybe lead with the demands about the anti-racist training and the permanent senior black male administrator and the advisor committee of African-American athletes. Maybe don't lead with that pay us $10 million one. That one kind of hits a little wrong with me. And I don't like it. Yeah, I got a bad taste in my mouth. And you know what? A couple of these guys, the relationship I had with them, the way that they kind of went about their business when they were at Iowa, that kind of left a bad taste in my mouth as a teammate. So that's as much time as I'm going to spend on that. If this picks up traction, I would be really, really surprised. I saw the response was essentially, and this is again from Chad Lystico's article, they reached out for comment to President Bruce Harreld. And again, from Lystico, Bruce Harreld shared this statement. We appreciate some former athletes sharing insights on their experience while at the University of Iowa. Many of their concerns have been reviewed and addressed. And to be clear, any student athlete that has left the university and did not obtain their degree is welcome to return, and we are here to support them. There are several demands outlined in the letter, and we are proud of the efforts made to date. We have a path forward that includes ideas and recommendations from many current and former student athletes aimed at making the University of Iowa a more inclusive and better place to learn and grow and compete as an athlete. However, the university rejects the demands for money and personnel changes. There you go. If this really becomes something, we'll talk about it more. That's as much as I'm going to say for now. Moving on. Jeff Brohm, another thing that was announced today on Sunday. Hella news. Jeff Brohm and... it came out that he had COVID on Sunday morning, I believe it was reported. So head coach of the Hawkeyes' first opponent has COVID. Now, we saw something similar to this last week where Nick Saban got COVID. And initially he was positive. He then took another test, and tested negative three times. And then within the span of 3 days was essentially like, full go again, 100%, nothing changed. I don't know if, I don't know if there's got to be preset. You know, I saw on Twitter that the coaches in the Big Ten were to follow a 10-day quarantine, assuming that they tested positive. Athletes, 21 days, absurd, first of all. Athletes, 21 days, coaches, 10 days. And so if that's the case, then Jeff Brohm will not be on the sideline when the Hawks go to West Lafayette on Saturday. Now, I don't know if that is reliant upon Brohm taking another test today and getting a negative, and then maybe another one on Monday when this comes out, getting another negative. If he gets a couple negatives that says he doesn't have it, is he allowed to come back? I'm not sure. I'm not sure if those are, if the rules are differing between the SEC and the Big Ten, or if you have one positive test, boom, you popped, you got to do the 10 days, regardless of if you test negative a couple days later. I don't know. What are the implications of that for Purdue, for Iowa? Obviously, you'd rather have the head coach on the field than not, right? He's your head guy. He's the head of the program, head of the snake. Can a team go out with the rest of the staff minus one coach, the head coach, and go win a ball game? Yeah, it's been done before. Is Purdue still a great team, even though that a great team, who knows if they're a great team, an above average team, a serious opponent that Iowa has to take very, very seriously on Saturday? Absolutely. It doesn't matter if Jeff Brohm's on the field or in attendance or not. I know that I can't speak for what that's going to do to Purdue. I don't know the student athletes there. I don't know how much they're rah-rah for him or maybe not so much for other coaches. I know this, and I'll compare it to if it happened to us at Iowa. If KF, for some reason, was not able to be at the game, some of the teammates, you know, I would like to think that most of the teammates, you know, because usually that's going to be a serious thing. You know, there's a death in the family or there's a real sickness or, you know, something happens. I would like to think that most of my teammates would like to rally and use that as fire, use that little bit of adversity as motivation. I would like to think that so maybe this is, I wouldn't call it still a good thing for Purdue, but I don't think, like, in no circumstances Jeff Brohm being away from the game going to be a large detriment to Purdue. All right. They still have an offensive coordinator, offensive coaches, defensive coordinator, defensive coaches. They know the game plan. It may be a little more difficult this week, but I guarantee there's going to be a direct Zoom line from Brohm's house to the Purdue facility where he's communicating with them 24/7. And I just, as I'm sitting here, sorry, I paused because I'm getting text messages from teammates about all this shit going down. Purdue's going to be able to come out. They're going to be able to play football. They got players. They got David Bell. They got Rondell Moore. They're going to be fine. It'll be interesting. You know, it'll be interesting. Who knows if he has it, do other Purdue players have it? Will Purdue players come out positive this week? Who knows? I saw the Hawks were like a +2 on some sports book. So this game's going to be close. I think it's going to be a great game. We'll talk about it more on Thursday. Moving to our final thing of the day. I asked for questions. Again, I'm going to move most of these over to Thursday when I've got the guys back on here. But and several of them were about Jeff Brohm's absence, if he's unable to coach. I tweeted there was a kicker who missed a field goal and got in a scuffle with one of his players. Went after him. I imagine the player came over and said, like, fuck you, dude. You can't make that kick. Like, what? You got to make that. And then the kicker got pissed and, like, they were tussling over it. It reminded me, and I tweeted about a time that Drake actually did that to Ron Caluzzi in 2016. And I'm going to let him tell that story. Pretty funny. I actually have a part in it. It'll be better when Drake tells it, obviously. Morgs says, what player other than our QB Spencer can we not afford to lose due to injury or COVID? That's a great question. Spencer's obviously number one. It's hard for me to come up with a specific guy on this one. And that's probably a good thing, at least offensively. We lose one of our receivers and we're deep. You know, we talked about it last week. We lose one of our running backs and we got a couple in the second and third string position to kind of, you know, step up. I would say, in my opinion, it would be Linderbaum. I don't know the depth we have at center. I know he's great. A guy who touches the ball on every play and is going to be dealing with exchanges between him and Spencer. Like, that's a super important relationship. So I don't know who moves to center, but losing our center would be tough. So that's my answer for offense. On defense, just because there's some questions, I would say I think our D-line's deeper than we think it is, but I would say any linebacker or DB, any of them. Because it cuts into the depth that we already don't know about, if that makes sense, you know. So essentially, take any spot where we're not exactly just, we can't just reload a guy, and that's the spot. Obviously, quarterback is usually that way because there's only a couple on the team. I never worry about the DBs. I mean, we've lost games because of some bad secondary play before, but. I would say center, Linderbaum, maybe one of our linebackers. Who knows? There's a question. I'll finish on this one. This Purdue's head coach being out of the game make a huge impact? Again, not really. I don't think so. Will the long snapping game be on point? Will we see any three punter formations? Who's going to be the holder? These are the things Iowa fans need to know. We'll end it here because a lot of these, I want Kevin and Drake's answers. I'm not the content guy. I'm just not the guy, you know? I'm just not the guy. But the long snapping game should be on point. It really should never not be on point at any school. Your long snapper week one is going to be Austin Spiewak. He is a fifth-year senior that waited 2 years behind yours truly and 2 years behind Jackson Subert. So he's been on the team since 2016. He's played 16, 17, 18, 19, 20. He hasn't played, but he's been on the squad. So Austin is a guy who is extremely, extremely accurate and smooth on PAT field goal snaps. And he's a guy who can get it done. I would not call him the most athletic long snapper. And Spiewak, if you listen to this, is nothing against you. This is just my breakdown. He's going to be able to get the long snapping done just fine. You know, if he would have had to have gone in the last couple of years, if Subert got hurt, I would have had all the faith in the world. And I think he's smart enough, knows the system, knows what we're trying to get done on special teams, that he will be able to, he will play his role just fine and exceed expectations at long snapper position this year. I highly doubt we see any three punter formations, even though we have three on the depth chart. Put one of them back there, let them smoke it. I don't care. Rockets to the moon. Who's going to be the holder? Great question. It's usually one of the punters. So I would say it's either going to be Gersonde, who's, again, been around a long time. Either Gersonde or could be Torrey Taylor, the punter. Could also be a backup quarterback. Those are probably who you're looking at. So, you know, you never know. Padilla or Gersonde or Taylor is my guess. Got to love the special teams questions. That's it. I'm going to wrap this one up. Hopefully you guys listened and got a little something out of it. It's game week. It's exciting. We will actually have an action-packed episode finally on Thursday, previewing the Purdue game, previewing Big Ten in general, talking about some Big Ten lines. We're going to get some actual winners out of Kevin Ward because the Big Ten is playing. And I'm glad I'm ready to ramp this stuff back up. I'm so happy that you guys continue to listen and through a slow time, really the past month or so, past couple months. Now is when we have fun. Now is when we go. Now is when we have content to talk about Hawkeye football. It's exciting. We're 5 days out when you're listening to this or less. And I cannot wait for the swarm on Saturday. That's it. Episode 154? I have no idea. Signing off.
I'm MJ Acosta-Ruiz.
And I'm Lindsay Zarniak.
And together we'll be hosting the On Her Turf podcast. This summer, On Her Turf is hosting a daily Olympics podcast
that focuses exclusively on women's sports and the amazing women competing in Tokyo.
We'll bring you interviews with Olympians and in-depth analysis on your favorite teams.
Plus, we're going to talk about some of the challenges still facing women's sports today.
So join us daily at On Her Turf as we cover all the excitement of the Tokyo Olympics.
Be sure to check us out on Apple Podcasts and be sure to follow On Her Turf on Twitter and Instagram too.